So this piece is called Hachana Pnimius Rosh Hashanah. It's the inner preparation for Rosh Hashanah. How does one prepare themselves for Rosh Hashanah? And Rav Dessler, in his unique way, he really hits on a very important and deep point in a person, which I think, as we see it, it's somewhat scary in a certain sense, but it's also very revealing in terms of how we understand ourselves. So to begin, Ratzon Adam Hu Mahuso. The essence of a person is their Ratzon, is their desire. And we understand that Ratzon, in Lashon HaKodesh, the word Ratzon was related to Ratz. You run to that which you desire. And our whole lives are based on what we desire within. And there's more open desires that we're aware of, and there's things that are subconscious in us. Ultimately, the deepest part of the person is our deepest desires that we have, and that really motivates our entire lives. Kabbalistically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a Ratzon, and everything else emanates from that. Meaning Hashem, whatever Ratzon Hashem is, Hashem has a Ratzon for this world, and everything He does in the world comes from that Ratzon. And that's the essence of who we are, is our Ratzon within ourselves, and that which we desire really drives us, and that's who we are. Al derech zeh shel havei maamarim. So through this we can understand the famous quote from the Gemara, Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesa, Pesuchim Lefanav. We know in Rosh Hashanah it says that Hashem opens up the Sefer of Chaim and the Sefer of Mesa. Kikamosha Sifrei Chaim, Musav al Chaim Behove, Kin Gam Besifrei Mesa. So our picture of Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesa typically is that, you know, some people will live, some people will die this year, Chas V'Shalom. That's our typical understanding. Rishon explained that's incorrect. And it's very simple why. Because we know people who are Rishayim that live out the year, and we know Tzadikim do die. No Tzadik lives forever. Even a Tzadik will be written down in what we would call Sifrei Mesim in that sense, but he's a Tzadik. How is he in Sifrei Mesim? That's for Rishayim. So the answer is that Chayim Mesim here is a whole different context. And he says, just like Sifrei Chayim is talking about those who are currently alive, so Sifrei Mesim are those who are currently considered dead in their lifetime. That's the distinction he makes. You can be alive in your lifetime, or you can be dead in your lifetime. What does that mean? There are people out there who live very real lives. Their lives are substantial. Their life is true. They live for true existence. Some people, their lives are just fantasy. They're not living in reality. They're living lives built up on fantasy, on illusion, on dimyon. Shechayim him b'dimyon hevlusam bilva. Their entire life is centered around that, which is merely fantasy. V'kemon shechaser l'chayim hatochen. And since their life is missing substance, is missing reality, so even though they're walking and they're alive, they're essentially dead in this world because they're not connected to anything of reality. It's false. Because what is death? Death is when you leave the reality which we're in, that vekas eladimyom, and when you enter into a world of fantasy. We say tzadikim b'misasam or krim chayim. A tzadik who's dead is still alive because he's connected eternally to the source of life. A rush in his lifetime is called dead, the Gemara says, because he's disconnected from anything of reality. I think a good mashal to give to this, it's a somewhat of a rough mashal, but it gives us a good picture of it. You could take an appliance and plug it into the wall. So as we see it, it's going to run forever. You know, I mean, we don't think about the power plant. So there's unlimited electricity in the wall which can run this appliance. When it's on battery power, its life is limited. So in a certain sense, the moment that's unplugged, even though it may run for the next 2 months on batteries, is essentially dead because what it's connected with is not reality. It's just stored up from its previous connection when it was charging in the wall. And now it's gone. The Rasha's lifespan as it is right now, so he's given a measure of life in this world because that's what Hashem allocates to him, but he's not connected to the source of anything. He's not connected to reality. He's living a life, and he's really running on fumes, as it were, and eventually he's going to be dead and he has nothing left of himself. So that's the imagery that Rav Dessler is giving to Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Mesim. And it's not about, you know, is a person alive or dead? It's about, are you connected to the eternal Metzias of Hashem? Is your life built on reality, or is your life built on fantasy? And that's the difference between being alive or being dead. So he elaborates on this a lot more. But the way he describes it, it's going to be something which is much more far-reaching. So let me give a little hakdama to the next paragraph, and then we'll read through it. I think there's a misconception out there, which many of us have. And the misconception is the following. You know, people view themselves, you know, there's me, and I have a neshama within. That's very often how we view things. On one of my kids' like music albums, there's this song that drives me crazy. Maybe it might drive me crazy, but this one, the words drive me crazy. And the song is, it goes, me and my neshama are the very, very best friends there can be. Right? So I think it's wrong. I think it's an incorrect understanding of the neshama. Because it's not like me and my neshama. My neshama is me. That's who I am. It's the other way around, really. The way that it's described is that we are our neshamas, and the guf is merely clothing on top of the neshama. So the essence of a person, the me, is the neshama, and the body is something that goes on top of it for now in this world. After 120 years, the body is removed, and you're still there. And the way we view it, really, should be the following. You know, inside of all of us, you know, we are the people who are thinking and hearing and seeing and feeling. That is the neshama. And after 120 years, that's we're still there. We don't disappear. It's not that, you know, I disappear and my neshama floats away somewhere to be happy forever. The same consciousness we have right now in our lifetime, as we are, that we take that with us. The body stays behind. The body goes in the ground. But everything, you know, our feelings, our thoughts, our priorities, what we value, that awareness sticks. That's us. That's who we are. That's not something separate from us. There's not me and my neshama. There's me. And there's a body happens to clothe my neshama in this world so I can interact with the world in Olam Hazeh. But at a certain point, that body goes into the ground, and I'm still here. We don't disappear. We go. So Rav Dessler is going to explain this, you know, in a lot more marichlis. But he's going to give us really a vivid picture of what, you know, of what we should understand of ourselves, and he'll at the end tie it back into Rosh Hashanah. Vezos ledas ki ein misas guf mashane be'etzem es matzava pnimi shel adam. Death does not change the essence of a person. Harasha. A Rasha lives life clinging to dimyon, to fantasy. His life is about money, it's about taiva, it's about kavod, it's about kinah, it's about his possessions, things which we see as not eternal ideas, not things that have only a temporary value. And that's how he lives his life. So what happens when he dies? He doesn't suddenly change into a tzaddik, he doesn't change. His values don't change after death. His values remain the same. The problem is that he's dead now and he can't fulfill any of these values that he has. He can't find that which satiates him, which pleases him. And he wants it even more and more. He has this terrible hunger. It's torture. Somebody who wants to eat and there's food everywhere, but you can't eat it. It's very little that's more torturous than that. You hear terrible stories of people who are in the camps, and they're terribly thirsty, and they're walking alongside a stream during a death march, and the Nazis said, you can't drink anything, and they can imagine, you know, any more torture than such a thing. A Rush, after he dies, he wants his money, he wants his taiva, he wants his food, he wants his kavod, but he's dead. And there's no way to achieve that. But that didn't change in the person. No, that's still what he wants. That's what he built his life on in his lifetime. And that's who he is after death. So, and since he can't fulfill his desires, they become even stronger. The hunger becomes more and more, and the inability to fulfill it torments him. So he brings down here a very interesting example. Maseches Brachos Perek Mishameso. There's a story in the Gemara in Brachos. Sharuchos es anyu ledas mechori apargod manigzar olam b'inyani hagashmius. So the story there, Bekitzer, the story goes the following. There was, I forgot who, one of the Amorayim, he had, for various reasons, had to spend the night in a cemetery. He had to sleep in the cemetery. So as he's sleeping in the cemetery, he hears some of the spirits in the cemetery talking, like a ghost story, you know, these are the spirits talking. And it was these two young girls who passed away young, apparently, in the Gemara, and they said, let's go hear what's happening up in Shemayim. Like, they wanted to hear the gossip up in Shemayim. So one of them says, I can't go because I was buried in this like really like not nice mat, and I'm embarrassed to go up there in the way I look. So the other one says, okay, I'll go up and I'll let you know what's happening up there. So she flies up, whatever that means, and listens to what's happening behind the scenes in Shemayim, comes back and tells her friend what's happening. That's the story of the Gemara in short. So what does that mean? These ruchos, these spirits, were interested in what was happening in the physical world. They want to hear rumors about what's going to be in the coming year on Earth. Now you think after death, like you're past this world, you don't really care like what's going to happen in this world this year, like what's going to be the Redstone score and how are the farms going to do and like who's going to win the election. Like this shouldn't really matter to you after you die. But these two girls were interested in what's happening in this world after death. So Rav Dessler says, V'yoser mizeh, even beyond this, she'osa haruach ha'isa kavura machsela shokanim, nesbaisha mizeh. This one of these spirits, she was buried in this like in the very unattractive reed mat. And she was ashamed of her looks. Then we think after death, like everyone's in a shema, like what do you carry? Everyone, when a shema don't have looks, like what do you carry look like? But she was embarrassed of the fact that she was wearing this mat. So she still felt a sense of kavod as if she was still in this world. So Rav Dess was pointing out a very, he's going to bring more from Rosa Eibeschitz in a second. You know, these two girls had died, but their values and their interests and their feelings were still based totally on values of this world. It's a very strange thing. But Rebbe Rav Yonason Zal, so Rav Yonason Eibeschitz explains by Yaros Devash, so there's a machlokus in the Gemara. Do the dead, are they aware of this world? We always wonder, and once someone passes away, like how much information about our world are they aware of? You know, what's happening? Do they keep tabs on us? Like, how does that work? So it's a machlokus in the Gemara, if they understand what's going on in our world or not. And Rav Yonasan Eibeschitz says, Eilil Derechim Chayim, they're both true. I mean, it depends on the person. Because those people who die, and they die, but their lives were centered on the material, on the physical, on this world. So once they die, they're still interested. You know, someone who builds up their whole life, totally focused on the latest styles, or on the football game, or on politics. So once they die, they still want to know about the latest styles or football scores or politics because that's who they were. That was their essence. That's what drove them. That's what motivated them in this world. But people who were people of spiritual stature, their lives were built on Tov and Emes and Chesed and Torah and Tefillah and helping others. So they don't really care about this world once they're gone. No, they're having a great time up there. They don't really care what's happening in this world. It doesn't interest them anymore. So we know there are sources to say that you know, loved ones who are departed might come to family simchas, things like that. But that's a ruchniyastika connection. You know, they're there to celebrate a bris or a chasna. They're seeing the ruchniyas carry on to the next generation. So I would think that that's not necessarily being interested in our world. That's being interested in their legacy carrying on. So we can explain the medrash v'cherem domlin and similar medrashim as well. Shehutzrach yirmiyahu navi la'oras avos hakadoshim espal al yisrael. Yirmiyahu Navi, we actually have one of the keynotes on Tisha B'Av is centered upon this story. It says that when Klal Yisrael was heading towards the Churban, so Yirmiyahu Navi wanted to have the Avos daven on our behalf. So yeah, he's a Navi, I guess he had access to the Avos, one way or the other, whatever that means. And he has to go and he has to wake them up to daven. So you would think, well, if there's anything the Avos should be concerned about in our world, it's Klal Yisrael. If Klal Yisrael is heading towards the Churban, even the Avos would be totally on top of that. And they would be there in Shemaim already, like, you know, interceding on our behalf. But they had to be woken up, it says. They were not aware, and Yirmiyahu had to come in and, like, wake them up and tell them about it, whatever that means. So how do we understand that? It's because the Avos are on such a high level. Their whole focus was the world of Ruchnius. But the Tachin Lehem Yediyam Olam Hazeh, and knowledge of this world had no place for them. Yediyas Adimyon, because they said this world's a temporary world. We're in the world of reality right now, so it doesn't. You know, they had no awareness until Yirmiyahu had to come and say, you know, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, we need your help down here, and then they were able to inspire them to come daven on our behalf. So, put in other words, to explain it more, somebody lives a life based on Ruchnius. So you go up to Shemayim, and it's like a kid in a candy store. Because your whole life you've wanted to reach out to Hashem, connect more, do good, and understand MS. But things in this world hold us back sometimes. You know, we have a lot of obligations, we have Yitzhahara, we have challenges, we have duties, we have things that don't allow us to fully connect to the spiritual as we wish. But after 120 years, nothing holds you back anymore, and it's all there for you, and you can partake of it. But if your life is centered upon the physical, so then after 120 years you go up there and there's nothing to do. You know, there's no food and there's no drink and there's no kavod and there's no taiva and there's no money. So you go out of your mind. It's torturous because you know all these things in Olam Hazeh are available to you, but you can't even goof anymore. You don't have any of the tools to access them, and you feel tortured. So he explains this actually in a very fascinating way. So this hunger a Rasha has for his taiva, even after death, it pushes them to search the whole world over to fulfill these taivas. The Gemara mentions a certain punishment after death that's called kafa kela. For those who might be aware of kafa kela, the way it's usually pictured is basically the neshama doesn't even get the chance to enter Gehenna. The neshama is stuck in this world, and it says that these destructive malachim chase the neshama around, tormenting it. That's the way it's described. So on a shallow level, you have this like cartoon image of like these like malachim like taking a neshama, like playing baseball with it or something, and putting in the slingshot. Literally means a slingshot, kafakela, it's a slingshot. So you have this like childish view of like this neshama being like chased around by these demons and being shot around in slingshots, and you know, that's the shallow understanding of it. Rav Dessler says here an amazing thing. He says, what is kafakela? What is that punishment? Hamuskar b'svar makadoshim, which the svar mentioned. So we say, kilo satin hu yitzaharu hu malcha maves. So we understand that the Satan, Yetzer Hara, Malchut Mavis are all associated. It's all one entity according to Gemara. So we understand that the punishment we receive in Shemayim and the chait that we do are all one. What does that mean? We don't look at onshim as like a punishment. Like, you did something wrong, I have to punish you. Onshim are a result of our action. You know, doing an avera creates a sense of tumma. It creates some sort of destructive force or destruction made in Shemayim. And then the punishment from that is the fact that I have to deal with that. It's not Hashem has to, it's not a separate thing. It's not Hashem then therefore will punish you. It's that my action created some form of tumma, some form of destruction in Shemayim, and therefore I have to grapple with that destruction. So he explains more. And we know that only after kafakela do you even get to Gehenna. As he quotes from Simchas Yisrael of Kelm, the altar of Kelm, if only we can get to Gehenna. It's a funny phrase for us, but what it means is that kafakela doesn't help you. Kavakela is a punishment which you're not accomplishing through the punishment. You're not growing, you're not changing, you're not purifying yourself. You're just stuck being tormented by the negative taivos and destruction we've created in our lifetime. Gehenna is a privilege because Gehenna cleanses you. Gehenna is the ticket into Gan Eden. But these Rishayim who get Kavakela, they don't even get entrance to Gehenna quite yet, and they're stuck just suffering and being tormented before they even get a chance to clean themselves out and be ready for Gan Eden. So why are we bringing all this up? I mean, it's kind of a scary thought, but what's the point of it? So he says the following: Gehenna mi inyan charata birur, because Gehenna is a place where you can retrospect upon your actions, reflect upon them, and you can purify yourself. Like we say about Blue Korach, Shesokim, Moshe, Mesvasa, Emes, Him Badayim. We know that the people swallowed up in Korach's rebellion, they're forced to recognize the truth of Moshe Rabbeinu in the Torah, and that's a cleansing process. But it is about also for the tikkun. Af kafakela, he galos nara shel chipus acharei mash yefshar limtso shem. Kafakela is the result of somebody whose life is built up on fantasy, that he's forced looking around for his fantasies and his taivas and his drives, and he can't fulfill them. V'kvarnemar v'sfarim shemalchei chabala, these angels that come and chase around the neshama, shemetaivos atzman, mekoch atzum behen, v'yidnu manoch v'nefesh harasha, v'yiritzu halav hala. What these are is the person's own taivas they built up in their lifetime. We're not talking about some separate angels that are appointed to go punish the guy. It's the demons we've created within ourselves, as you put it that way. Those things in our own lives, which in our lifetime, you know, we have let pursue us and lead us to do things which are merely fantasy, not reality. So these are still tormenting us after death. And at that point, we can't fulfill what they want out of us, so they chase us around and we're stuck. You know, you imagine this neshama, and all at once is a stake. But it's a neshama, can't have a stake. So it's flying all over the whole world, and has access to every possible stake in the entire planet, but it has no mouth, it has no stomach, and it just has to look at everyone else enjoying their steak and suffer. That's, you know, that's a small example, but that's because their whole lifetime was built upon the steak, as opposed to the person whose life is built in ruchnius. So then after death, there's no kafakela, because, you know, your values are the proper values. Your life is built on truth, on reality. So then you get entrance into the next world, because that's where you belong, in the spiritual world. That's who you are. So the person who's in the world of kafakela, he just wants really to, you know, basically be a rock and avoid it all. But kafakela, after a while, because of the length of time, the taivos wear down, and eventually that nefeshama gets entrance into Gehenim, and then eventually into Gan Eden. But Rav Dessler is describing those as a very deep point, which is that, you know, our conscience of who we are remains with us forever. That's who we are. What we develop in ourselves in our lifetime, that's something which is eternal. And therefore, those values come with us after death, and we have to grapple with them. So if value is in the right place after death, you know, the Shema is very happy. We're very happy, because now we can actually achieve that which we've desired in our lifetime. It's the kid in the candy store. But if the values are not the values in Shemayim, and is built up on the fantasies of this world, so after death, it's just fantasies, and you can't fulfill them, and you're stuck until the Neshama gets a chance to develop a little bit more of a spiritual sense. Maybe we'll skip just for to the next section, just for lack of time. He basically goes on and describes the same point in the next paragraph. He elaborates on it more. But the point being that a person can have a sense of reality in life. He can be connected to the real, or he can be connected to that which is fantasy. Maybe to add in one point, a point I think I shared before, but I think it's a very important point. Now, Rosh Hashanah is the day of the Chid of Adam Rishon. It's the day, it all happened in one day. You know, they're created in Gan Eden. They had their children that day. They sinned that day. They were thrown out on that day. And, you know, that was a very big day in history. The first day of creation of Adam and Chava. So the chait of Adam and Hashem confronting Adam, I always feel is really an image of Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah is that same day. Rosh Hashanah is the day of the chait of Adam. That's what Rosh Hashanah is. So Adam is chote, as we are. Adam's given challenges as we are. And, you know, him on his level, us on our level. But that's reality of the human being. We have our challenges. Hashem gives us, you know, our Yitzhara, we have choice, we have to choose right, etc. And that's what Adam had to do as well. He failed, and we also fail at times. So what happens after that? So afterwards, Hashem, it says in the Pasuk that Hashem is walking through the Gan, L'ruach Hayom. And he calls out to Adam the famous term, Ayeka, where are you? So Adam's hiding. He hides away somewhere. And then eventually, you know, Hashem spots him, as it were. He has to come out, and he has to say, you know, here I am. And Hashem says, you know, what happens? And he has to admit to the fact that they ate from the Eitz HaDaas. So that's the story, Bekitzer. So this whole idea of Hashem coming through the garden and saying Ayeka and Adam hiding, like, well, how do we swallow that exactly? So the Targum Yonason, I didn't bring it with me. Targum Yonason says there a very important description of what's happening. You know, Adam hides away because Adam doesn't want to face reality. Right? Adam sins. Hashem confronting him is a confronting reality. Adam had eaten Tzadas. He's entered into a world of fantasies, as if he could hide from Hashem. As if Hashem won't, I'm going to go hide over here behind this tree and Hashem won't find me. What's he thinking on his level? I don't know. But that's how it's described. I mean, he says, I hid. And when Hashem says Ayeka, what Hashem is telling him, according to Targum Yonason, he says to him, why do you think you can hide from me? For me, you know, every place in the world is wide open and exposed, in the dark as in the light, etc. There's no hiding from Hashem. In other terms, what Adam has to do is I have to confront reality. I can't hide from reality. I could say, you know, now I'm going to hide away, no one's ever going to find me again. But that's ridiculous. And with Hashem, it's certainly ridiculous. It can't happen that way. So what are you forced to do? Had Adam come out right away and said, Hashem, here I am, chatasi. He could have stayed in Gan Eden. He's only thrown out of Gan Eden when he denies the chait. He starts blaming Chava, and Chava blames the Nachash, and, you know, they don't do tshuva. Had they done tshuva immediately, had they confronted reality, confronted what was, you know, Hashem who's confronting them, so he could have said, you know, Hashem, I made a mistake. Chatasi, and Hashem would have said, okay, I forgive you, and you can stay in Eden. But that seems to be how the story goes. But because Adam wanted to deny reality, deny Hashem, and didn't do tshuva, he's thrown out. So I find Rosh Hashanah is really that same exact confrontation of Hashem towards every individual human being in this world. Rosh Hashanah, it says in Chazal, it says, Kiva Rosh Hashanah. Hashem is coming, and Chazal say, he comes in Rosh Hashanah, Kiva B'Yom Kippur, he comes in Yom Kippur. Hashem's coming. Right? Hashem's always here. But what does it mean Hashem's coming? So there's a confrontation. Kol Boy Olam Over the Funk Mimaron. Every single creation in this world passes through before Hashem one by one, Rosh Hashanah. One at a time. Individually. And Hashem confronts us. Let's say he confronted Adam. So we can attempt to hide, and we can deny what we've done, and we can try to avoid reality. Or we can, as they say, face the music. And stand up to Hashem and say, Hashem, I understand I've done wrong. I understand I have challenges. I'm not perfect. I'm trying. I've sinned. Give me a chance. Help me out. If we do that, then like Adam would have been, we're zochet to continue in the Sefer HaChaim. If we deny reality, so we're latching on to really, it's fantasy, because we're acting as if we can avoid Hashem, which Hashem is the reality of this world. Hashem is a source of reality. Hashem is the only substantial existence which there is. And if we try to deny that, then we're living a life of fantasy, as if we can steer around Hashem in some way and go about our normal everyday activities, you know, without trying to improve and try to fool Hashem, as it were. But that's dimyon, that's fantasy. But Hashem confronts us, and Hashem says, Ayeka, where are you? I'm here. Come out, talk to me. Let me know what you're doing. Let's see what's happening here. So if we can handle the confrontation, that's the goal of Rosh Hashanah, that's Sefer HaChaim. If we try to hide in Rosh Hashanah, then we're doing what Adam did, and Adam was around Eden for that. I think it's a very clear connection between Adam and Rosh Hashanah every single year. And it's really the question of, are we willing to look at reality, confront the MS, or are we still latching on to fantasy? Which one are we doing? And it's a heavy question for us. It's a hard question, but Hashem doesn't expect perfection, but Hashem expects us to be real and sincere. That's it. No, Hashem doesn't want us to be perfect every single Rosh Hashanah. Hashem knows we're not perfect. That's why he gives us Rosh Hashanah Kippur, because he knows there's going to be a Veros and a Kapara. So we're given that opportunity. But we have to at least be willing to step up and say, okay, Hashem, I'm ready to talk. You know, I'm ready to work on something. I'm not going to deny my flaws. I'm going to recognize them and work on them. That's our role. It's not perfection. It's just to be able to confront reality. Let's continue here a little bit. The Rosh Hashanah Kaveh Madrega HaRuchnis. So Rosh Hashanah, he says, sets our spiritual level. What does that mean? The Shlosha Sfarim Niftachim Rosh Hashanah. So we mentioned before these different books that Hashem opens Rosh Hashanah. We have the Sifrei Chaim, Sifrei Mesim, and it talks about also the Sifrei Beinonim. There's like this middle book. The Kulam Inyan HaRuchnis V'Seyat Shmaya B'Shvila. So what does it mean? We're talking here about spiritual life and spiritual death. As we said, it doesn't mean physical life and death. I mean, that's part of Rosh Hashanah. Miyechim Yamus is part of what we say. But Hashem's books are not about who's dying and who's living in terms of our physical bodies. Hashem's books are setting the stage in terms of our spiritual existence. That's what his books are doing. This is already discussed in the Rishonim and the Gemara for that very question we said before. Rishayim do live and Tzadikim do die. So the answer is, we're not talking about life and death in this world when we discuss these books. We're talking about life and death in the eternal sense. Am I plugged into reality, or am I cut off from reality? Tosfos says that Rosh Hashanah's din is really setting the tone for Olam Haba, not permanent for Olam Hazeh. The Kavanasim Inyan Madrega Rochnis Shitokin Olam Haba Shelo. The Emes Gama Gashmias Habal Adam. So even though Rosh Hashanah has impact upon our lives in this very world, we understand that everything is set in Rosh Hashanah even for this world. That's only as a result of our spiritual existence, our spiritual level. Because even that which comes in the world of Gashmias, he says, that's coming from the Tzad Kedusha. Netzorech Alei Aleruchnias, because it's that which we need for our Ruchnias. Meaning, if Hashem is saying, okay, this person's a Tzadik, and this person therefore deserves, you know, eternal Olam Haba and very high levels of connection Olam Haba, therefore I have to give this person the tools in this world to maintain that. Because if I take away this person's money, health, etc., that might then compromise their opportunities in Olam Haba. And because this person associates with the neshama and ruchnius and reality and deserves olam haba in a very high sense, I'm going to make sure that olam hazeh fits that. So that's how it connects. So the ultimate goal is where this person's heading in the eternal sense. But based on that, I'm going to set things in this world to help maintain that, to help support that. It might be a challenge, or it might be something which is very rewarding to us. But it's those things we need to set our path in olam haba. For the Rasha, it's the opposite. The Rasha, Hashem, this person's going nowhere in olam haba. This person's life is built up on fantasy. So I'm going to give them in this world those things which will keep them going in that direction. And that's the din in terms of the Rasha. But it's all emanating from the olam haba dikka perspective. It's not emanating from this world's perspective. And that's how Rav Dessler is explaining it. And he explains, Mishat Sorach Alel Ruchnias Kamushkas Rambam Sefer Shal Sadikim Gemurim Hanel Osam Shabbat Hashanah Him Shuvasam. So when we say this is a book of a tzaddik, what's the book of the tzaddikim? It's people who come to Hashanah with tshuva. That's a tzaddik, because they're confronting reality, they're confronting truth, they're confronting mitzias, and therefore they are now writing themselves in Sifrei Chaim. It's not that Hashem is deciding where do you go. You've put yourself in that book. May love Yikare, we say. It reads on its own. You know, Hashem doesn't do anything. You know, we decide where we belong, and that's where we are. We're in that book. Sifrei Mesim. What's Sifrei Mesim? Sifrei Mesim is for the Rasha that, based on his current matzav that he made for himself with his own free choice, he's not coming with tshuva to Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, that Rasha, he has inscribed himself in Sifrei Mesim, because he's already shown who he is and where he's going. He's cut himself off from reality. Well, the Beinanim, there's a middle book. What's the middle book? Elishim is Chalfim, V'Holchim Megadlos Lekatnus. The middle book on Rosh Hashanah, which the Gemara says is then completed in Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, you could put one way or the other. And that middle book is people who waver. You know, there's days where they're doing great and they're thinking great thoughts and they're focused on the spiritual. There's days where they've sunk down and their life is focused on this world, on Taiva, on Kavod, on Kinna, on things in the material world, and they're constantly in flux. That's a Beinani. The Beinani is in flux. So, Mimatzav Shel Metzias, Mimatzav Shel Dimyon. So in our terms, this person's life is wavering from connecting to reality to connecting to fantasy. And they go back and forth. Which is true with a lot of us. You know, a lot of us, we have our days, and we have our other days. You know, and things go back and forth sometimes. And that's called a Beinani. He says, I am the Sefer HaTanya. Sefer Tanya, he describes in a little different terms. Tanya describes how a tzaddik is somebody who has vanquished the Yitzhar from their hearts totally, basically, and they don't even have a desire to do bad. Everything is just totally focused on good. A Rasha is somebody that the evil takes over their hearts, and they're always just always doing bad, desiring bad. And the Beinani is really just about everyone else, which is most of us. Which, there's things of good we desire, there's things that aren't so good we desire, and we waver, we go back and forth. And that's called a Beinoni. And we haven't yet pushed its heart out of our heart. So the Tanya says that Beinoni always does right, but the Beinoni at least considers bad. Whereas the Tzaddik doesn't even consider bad. So the Tanya's Beinoni is a very high, probably a higher level than most of us, because we make mistakes sometimes. But the point is that the people who waver are called Beinonim. Bishvilma Seres Mitshuva. So Seres Mitshuva is really especially for the Beinanim. Because Gemara says that in Rosh Hashanah, the Beinanim get written in the book. They're Beinanim right now, but by Yom Kippur, they have to either put in the Sefer Chaim or Sefer Mesim. When Kippur comes around, you're going to be inscribed one way or the other, and you can't remain a Beinanim after Yom Kippur. Amnon Gamla Rasha, Shemshul Kames. But he says here a very insightful point. Even a Rasha who's considered dead, we said the Sefer Mesim is because the Rasha is cut off from reality. Gam lo yesh geder shel godless v'katnus. Even the Rasha, he also has his godless, his higher thoughts, and his katnus and his lower thoughts. What does that mean? Ach gadlusu machshava levad, mash'in katnuso he believe v'himetzias etzlo. The Rasha, he may have in his mind ideas of good, but in his heart, that which drives him, he's always doing bad. I mean, not every Rasha is evil through and through. Some Rishayim in their minds, they think positive thoughts, they want to do good, but they have zero self-control, they have no self-discipline, and their actions always end up being bad. We call it the heart, and the heart is what pumps the blood through the body, that's what drives you, that's your emotions, that's what you can't control. But you might intellectually understand right and wrong. Esav's head is buried in Maros Machpelah. Why? Because Esav in his head had ideas like the Avos. His head was on a level of the Avos, but in Esav's heart, he couldn't carry it out in his lifetime. So you go to Maros Machpelah, there's actually, you can see there's a sign there. It says, here, Esav's head lies over here. You know, there's a sign where Esav's Besorah, where it is, I guess. But what is it telling you? It's telling you that Esav in his head really was like Avnis and Yaakov in his head. It's just that in his heart and in his actions, he wasn't able to carry that out. So a Rasha may, in his mind, have good ideas and good thoughts, but in the world of reality, he can't carry that out into fruition. But Beinoni Shtem Belev Shtem Beshif and Panimus. A Beinoni has both in his head and his heart ideas of good and bad, so at times he can carry out the good, at times he carries out the bad. But Beinoni is going to waver in action also. El Shechofos Hen Zu Achar Zu, Pam Becho, Pam Becho. So Rav Dessler says here a very deep point. How do you tell if you're in the world of a Rasha or a Beinoni? So he says that a Beinoni feels shame when he does the wrong thing. A Rasha feels no shame. Because a Rasha is all intellectual, but in his heart it's all bad. The Beinoni has also, in his or her heart, has the feelings of good. So when it's in your heart and you do something wrong, that's where you feel a sense of shame. No, a sense of shame is considered a positive thing. You know, Klai Yisrael, one of our hallmark traits is we're bashanim. We have a sense of shame. No, we don't want to. We know that it's not healthy to walk around feeling as a guilty person. That's not the point. But when you're doing it wrong, there should be a sense that was wrong. I should have done that. You should feel a sense of remorse, a sense of shame, a sense of regret. A Rasha is somebody who does wrong and doesn't feel bad about it. And there's a very big difference between the two. I know the Bali Musar say that up in Shemayim, and one does Nevera. So Hashem writes things down in a very precise way. So if someone does Nevera, and they do it with excitement, and they feel no regret. So in Shemayim, Hashem writes in your book, says, you know, Yankel did a Nevera with excitement, with no regret. But if someone does Nevera, but they do it reluctantly, and afterwards if they feel ashamed of it, so in Hashem's book it says, Yankel did a Nevera reluctantly with a sense of shame. And those are worlds apart, huge worlds apart. Because one shows a person couldn't care less, and one shows a person really wants to do right, but they struggle. Most of us are hopefully in the second category, but that's worlds apart from the first category. It's a Rasha versus a Beinoni, is what we're describing here. There's a sense of reluctance, a sense of shame, a sense of I regret what I did versus I don't care. And then it's a big difference. So if you can feel a sense of shame, that shows that that's a very positive trait in a person, that shows you're on the right track. When it comes to a Rasha, so the only contradiction he has is in the external. I mean, he doesn't feel any guilt. He knows intellectually this is probably the wrong thing to do. But it's not in his heart. So there's no feelings of shame in the action. So through that, a person can ascertain where he or she is in terms of their own spiritual growth. The person who has no sense of busha. Again, Hashem understands that we do make mistakes. But we have to at least feel bad about the mistakes. Because we recognize their mistakes. So some people might think they're ashamed. But the sense of shame is also superficial, that they know they're supposed to be ashamed. So it's interesting to discern those two. Is it real shame, or is it my mind saying, I should be embarrassed if I just did? And there's a fine line between the two. But if you know and there's no feeling, then it's worthless. Knowing I should be ashamed, but having a feeling of shame, that gets into the category more towards the Rasha. Knowing that I should have shame and feeling a sense of it, that's the Beinoni. Again, these are worlds apart. So he brings here a very interesting example from Yeravam HaMelech. Yeravam was a terrible Rasha. Yeravam is the one who began Malchus Yisrael. And he created a terrible rift amongst Klal Yisrael. He put up Avodah Zarah. He banned them from the Beis Hamikdash. Considered one of the people who was not Zochet Olam Haba, terrible Rasha. So the Pasuk says, there's a story in Malachim. It says that a Navi approached him. I forgot the whole context. But basically a Navi said that... that's something to do with him. I can't remember the whole context. That's something to do with him. There's a Mizbeach, and it said to Yeravam, this Mizbeach is going to start bleeding or something if you approach it. I forgot the exact context of it. But what happened was Yeravam, he put out his hand towards the Mizbeach, and his hand froze. Hashem did a nace, and dried up, and he couldn't move it. It paralyzed. Vayachol Ashiva Elav, and he can't bring his hand back. So Yeravam, there's Navi there, he warns him what's going to happen, and Yeravam's hand just freezes, and he can't move it. So Yeravam said to this Navi, he said, Daven to Hashem, your God, so I can move my hand again. They'll unparalyze me. So there's a Chazal, look at this Pasuk, and he says, the wording used, he says to the Navi, Chonas Pnei Hashem Elokecha, Daven to Hashem, your God. So Yeravam was Ovid Avodah Zarah. And so meaning, he said, your God, because he didn't believe in Hashem, he served Avodah Zarah. But there's two different approaches in the Medrash as to what the idea is, why did he say your God versus God or my God. So there's two opinions. So one opinion says he said your God and not my God, because again he was Ovid Avodah Zarah, he didn't have emunah. V'chad Amar, and the other one said, be'ez upon him koro so lokai. How can I call him my God? Om makrav Avodah Zarah v'koro so lokai. I'm bringing karbanos to Avodah Zarah, and I'm going to call him my God. So the second opinion is more, there is a sense of shame. How can I use the words Elokai if I just brought a karma to Avodah Zarah? It doesn't fit me. It's incongruous with who I am. I can't say those words. And it seems to be a positive thing about Yeravam. At least he's being honest with himself and feeling a little sense of busha. And then the Medrash continues, Avu Pikin Vaychal Yishalkim Aspin Hashem Vateshav Yaramelech Elov. So the Navi davened, and the king's hand was able to move. Vatei Vishona was no longer paralyzed. Malo Kavrishona, what does it mean? It was like in the beginning. And Tichto, so Vati Kavrishona, in the Pashup Shah, it's talking about the hand. But the Medrash sees it as talking about Yeravam himself. He didn't change from this incident. You would think, you know, if the Navi comes and admonishes you, and freezes your hand, and davens Hashem, and releases it, maybe you change. Maybe it starts to grow in a moon a little bit. But Vatihi Kavrishona means he didn't change. In Tichtosh Esa Evil B'machtesh, you can take an evil person and you can crush him down in a grinder, he'll still be foolish. So Yeravam, he went through the grinder and he still came out at the end as a Rasha. So just like initially he did a Avodah Zarah, even afterwards he did the same thing. So that's the Medrash. So Rav Dessler wants to pick up on a point in this Medrash, because it's interesting. He does say that he was ashamed. According to one opinion of the Medrash, he couldn't get the words Elokai out of his mouth because he felt he felt that he was a hypocrite, and he felt a sense of shame in saying it. So according to one opinion here, he was ashamed between saying Elokai because he did Avodah Zarah. So if that's the case, then why didn't he change at the end if he felt a sense of shame? So based on what he said, it's very simple. The busha didn't help him, because right afterwards he started doing Avodah Zarah again. Why? Because there was no heart in this. There was no feeling. It was a very intellectual shame. He said, meaning he made intellectual accounting. He said, how could I say the words Elokai when I do Avodah Zarah? So even though intellectually he may have understood, yeah, it seems that Hashem has some power, but it's all intellectual. There was no feeling behind it. He didn't feel busha. He just thought about it. So it didn't change him at all. It didn't make him a different person, because it all remained in the intellect. And there was no roshim malev. It didn't all impact his heart. Rav Yochum Alevi Demir. So Rav Yochum says, Mashkiach of Mir says the following, Im Avar Adam Avera, if you do an Avera and you go immediately to a mitzvah, you don't feel any shame. This is actually a sign to a low level. We think a person who does an Avera and goes right to a mitzvah, that's a high level. You know, they're getting past it, they're going on, they're doing a mitzvah. But really, it doesn't mean to hold back from the mitzvah. But as you go into the mitzvah, there should be a sense of, like, I was just doing X that was wrong. This mouth, just the Lashon Hara, how is it davening now? Right? There should be that sense. We should still daven. I'm not telling you not to daven. But we should feel a little bit like, I just said Lashon Hara, how can I make a bracha? The same mouth. We should feel that. That should be a sensitivity that we have. It doesn't mean we shouldn't daven, and it means we should stop Lashon Hara, is what it means. but yeah, if you don't sense that, there's a problem. Because if there was some inner feeling, then you should be ashamed of coming before Hashem in tefillah or at the mitzvah. Was that the chesed when you just angered him a few moments ago? So that should be a feeling within ourselves. So I think as we approach Rosh Hashanah, so again, a person, it's a terrible thing to live with any sense of guilt, and that's not what we mean at all. But to feel a sense of shame in the fact that, you know, my averos were wrong, I really do in a heartfelt way regret them, and I want to change. That feeling we should have, to be able to go in front of Hashem. You know, manadaber, manomar, manstadak. You know, what can I say, Hashem? You know, I've made mistakes, and I can't approach you from any point of schus. I'm approaching you, pleading that you should help me out. That's the right approach, because we have to understand that, you know, we have our imperfections, and like Amrishan, we can't hide from it. We have to confront it. To put it all together, so life means you're connected with the source of existence and reality. Right, that's life. Death is when you unplug yourself from that. And you may end up burning on fumes for 120 years, but you're unplugged from reality. That's reality versus fantasy. We determine that. Now, what are the values we put our lives on? What are the things that we hold precious in life? What are the things that we strive towards? What are our ambitions? What are our desires? What's our rut zone? He said that rut zone is the essence of a person. So what are our deepest desires? Some people in the world, the deepest desire is, I want to make $60 million. I'll tell you this. I saw someone who I knew years ago, and I run to him occasionally. It's a sad story. It's somebody who really, every time I meet him, it's another get-rich-quick scheme. You know, he's not religious. Every time, it's another scheme. I'm going to make millions this time. I want to get $60 million. I want to do this. I want to do that. I'm serious. Every time I see him, it's another 15 different businesses he's trying to run. And I've known him now probably 20 years or something, and it's sad, because that's his life, and every single time it's going for the next possible way to get rich quick, and he's not rich, and it's not happening quick. I'll tell you that. But that's his desire is for money. I think it's very clear, and therefore that's what he's pursuing, and that's the values he has, and that's what he passes on to his children. It's a very sad thing. And it's total dimyon. I mean, I don't know if he'll ever achieve it. And if he does, it's not a lasting value in eternally. People who live their lives based on values that are eternal, they're spiritual, chesed, Torah, emes, tefillah, helping others, raising families, passing on meaningful things. Those are eternal values. Those are things which are real because they last. Because reality has to last, or else it also just falls away. That's a person connected to reality and to Metzius. If you can go to Hashem and that's your deepest Ratzon, that's who you are, so then Hashem says, okay, you're plugged into life. You're in the Sifrei Chaim. And I'm going to make sure you have those things in your own life that will bring you further into the Sifrei Chaim. If someone goes to Hashem, Chas V'Shalom, connected with fantasy, so then Hashem says, that's already Sifrei Mason. You've cut yourself off because you're building up your lives on nothing. And therefore, I'm going to give you Rosh Hashanah those things, and I'm going to keep you going that direction. Because the Derech Hashem Mutzilei Lechem Lichonos, so wherever you want to go is where Hashem pushes you. That's the point. And at the end, he says over here that we're really establishing our own level in terms of Chaim and Mesim, business feelings. And how do you know where you are? The sense of shame we have is a real determination of that. Because is the feeling of good in my heart, or is it only my mind? If doing good is in my heart, so then when I do something wrong, I feel bad about it. If the doing of good is only in my mind, then I don't. Even though I know it should feel bad, and I don't, so then that's a sign that your heart doesn't feel it, and that you're distant from it. I mean, and it could be we can have our days up and our days down. We have our days where we feel good, days don't feel good. But ultimately, if you're somebody with a sense within inner sense of spirituality. On days where you're not doing well, you still feel that you want to be doing well, and you feel bad about it. And that's the really deep point he's making. And I think ultimately, like on Marishan, we can't deny reality. There's no escaping from Hashem. No, it says in Avos, don't think that there's any way to escape. We have to confront it, and we don't have to be perfect. We don't have to say, Hashem, I did nothing wrong this year. Hashem, we don't tell you that we're tzaddikim, but that's not what we say. We say that we've done averus, we have, but it's okay because we're trying our best, working towards it. And we come to Hashem with that. We're coming with our tshuva in our hands, as he said. That allows us to be entered into the Sifrei Chaim. So everyone should have a Ksivah Chesima Tova, a good Kibben Shior of all good things.
You too.
And let's Hashem, I guess after Sukkot, we'll pick up.